This morning we continue on in our series on the Sermon on the Mount. We see that Jesus is continuing to describe what it means to put on his yoke while he sat on a hill and began to teach. Just by way of quick review, I mentioned a few weeks back that in the Jewish culture, the boys were expected to memorize the Pentateuch by the time they were 13 years old. Imagine that, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. My child doesn't remember to clean his room. And by 13 years old, they'd have the Pentateuch memorized. And at that point, they were considered to be a man in the Jewish culture, and he would then make a decision. If he was going to follow a trade of his father or a family member, or he had the option of continuing on in his studies in the Old Testament with the intent of becoming a rabbi. And if that was the trek that he decided to go on, he would continue to memorize not just the Pentateuch, but the entirety of the Old Testament. And he would then begin to put out resumes, if you will, and he would apply to different rabbis, certainly rabbis that they would respect. And the hope was that the rabbi would take this young buck under his wing. If this young student passed all of the tests and met all of the requirements that this rabbi had set up, if this rabbi thought that this young student had what it took to be his disciple, the rabbi would then say to him, "Come, follow me." And at that point, the student would leave everything, and he would assign himself to this rabbi with the goal of learning everything the rabbi knew. He would follow him around everywhere the rabbi went. He would literally put on the yoke of the rabbi. What is that? The yoke of a rabbi. Oftentimes we hear the word yoke, we think of that mechanism that binds two oxen together. But in the Jewish culture, a yoke was the rabbi's teaching. It was everything he believed doctrinally, morally, ethically, and every situation he would handle, everything he believed would be his yoke. It was his way of living. And this student would follow this rabbi around and take on the yoke of his rabbi. And this would last almost anywhere between 13 and 15 years until finally, after he had learned everything he could from his rabbi, this young student, around the age of 30, would then go on to become a rabbi himself. Very interesting. Jesus was 30 years old when he began his earthly ministry. And it's interesting, Jesus said those very familiar words, not necessarily so familiar to us today as it was to that culture of the day in Matthew chapter 11, where he says, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." And he says, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For I'm gentle and I'm lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." And so, having understood what it meant to take on the yoke of the rabbi, we see that Jesus has positioned himself on a mountain. And he is surrounded by people who wanted to be his disciples. In the company there that day, were those who wanted to take his yoke upon them. And as we saw all throughout chapter 5, in this Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is showing that his teaching, that his yoke is very different from that of the scribes and the Pharisees. He taught like no one had ever heard before. And what's real cool about Jesus is he's not talking about the law in the distorted way and the self-serving way that many of the rabbis were talking about, but rather he speaks to the intention of the law in this Sermon on the Mount. He gets to the heart of the matter. He addresses the parts of adherence that only God was able to see, because it was that which resides from the heart. And what Jesus was doing on the Sermon on the Mount, he's saying, hey, you've heard that it's said that you shall not commit adultery. But I say unto you that if you even look with at a woman with adultery in your eyes, in your heart, you've in lust after her, you've committed adultery in your heart. And what Jesus is saying is long before the act ever took place, it was conceived in the heart. And what Jesus is doing to those who wanted to be his disciples is he's getting to the heart of the issue. He is teaching unlike anyone had ever heard in his day. We just got done looking last week at the many, but I say unto yous. And Jesus is making a stark contrast between what the Pharisees taught and what was right. And he continues on as we move now into chapter 6. He continues in that same frame of mind. If you have your Bibles, let's take a look at that together. Matthew chapter 6. Let's take a look at verse 1. He says, take heed that you do not do your charitable deeds before men to be seen by them. Otherwise, you have no reward from your Father in heaven. Therefore, when you do a charitable deed, do not sound the trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory from men. Assuredly, I say to you that they have their reward. But when you do a charitable deed, do not know, let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, that your charitable deed may be done in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will himself reward you openly. He goes on to say, and when you pray, you shall not be like the hypocrites. For they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the corners of the streets, that they may be seen by men. Assuredly, Jesus said, I say to you, they have their reward. But you, when you pray, disciples, when you pray, those who want to be my disciples, go into your room, and when you have shut your door, pray to your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. And when you pray, do not use vain repetitions as the heathens do, for they think that they will be heard because of their many words. Therefore, Jesus said, do not be like them, for your Father knows the things that you have need of before you ask. It's very interesting. The inference here is that Jesus is referring to the religious leaders. He's talking about the hypocrites who are in the synagogues. But even more than that, he is addressing what was the traditional display of religiosity in their day. And he is saying that it wasn't pleasing to God because it wasn't done for God. Instead, it was done to be seen by men. Their acts of worship never got to their intended audience because their intended audience never really was God in the first place. And Jesus uses three examples that were commonly seen as religious activities, if you will, but fell far short of its proper audience. He addresses the topic of giving, of prayer, and of fasting, and how those religious activities that were paraded in the presence of people were never received as acts of worship because they weren't done, as our title suggests, coram Deo. What does that mean? Before the face of God. Their religious activities, giving, praying, fasting, were not received as acts of worship because they were not done coram Deo in the face of Almighty God, but instead they were done to be seen by men, to be applauded by men. And what Jesus is telling those who wanted to be his disciples is that if you want your acts of worship to be received by your heavenly Father, if he truly is the intended audience, then don't do it with the intent of impressing other people. Have you been around them? You ever talk to people and in the first 5 minutes they give you their whole resume of how much they know or what their latest bit of insight is? Notice Jesus doesn't say don't pray. That's not the point here. He doesn't say don't fast. He certainly doesn't say, hey, don't give. He all throughout the New Testament, we see that he is affirming every one of those things. Every one of those things are things that we are ought to do as his disciples. But what he is saying is that when you do it, make sure that your heart is pure, that your intent is right, your focus is correct, and that your audience is not everybody around you, but instead that we do it coram Deo in before the face of God, in the audience of one. Two things I want to raise your awareness to this morning, and then we're gonna celebrate communion together. Look with me again at verse 2. Verse 2, he says, therefore, when you do a charitable deed, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogue and in the streets, that they may have glory, that they may have the glory from men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But when you do a charitable deed, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, that your charitable deed may be done in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will himself reward you openly. I want to point out here, notice that there are two kinds of givers here. And both of them receive a reward. Both of them are giving, and both of them are receiving a reward. The difference is who it is that's giving the reward. Look, in Jesus' day, when somebody wanted to give to the needy, when somebody wanted to give an offering, what they would do is they would hire a trumpeter. And the trumpeter would go to the synagogue. This is true. And he would play his trumpet loudly. And everybody, especially those who were poor, knew somebody was about to give something. And what would happen is a crowd would form. And once the mass group of people came, that godly one would come forward with his checkbook in hand and make his sobering pledge to the poor of humanity. And what Jesus is saying is, don't call that an act of worship. But notice, they're giving to the poor, and they receive the reward. Well, what was their reward? Look. That they may, verse 2, they do in the synagogues and the streets, that they may have glory from men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. You see, to the one who sounds the trumpet, they receive the praise of men. And according to Jesus, that is their reward. Enjoy it. Because that's all you're going to get. If you want your act of almsgiving to be nothing more than the applaud of men, then that's all you're going to get. So I'd love to tell television evangelists and Christian celebrities who fly around on their private jets and wear their Armani suits and Rolex watches and say that this is the blessing of God. No, that is your reward. Enjoy it for as long as you're going to be here. I believe that with all my heart. I have a great opportunity today. I'm very excited today. I get to say thank you to Rick Warren. I'm going to have an opportunity to meet with him at a dedication ceremony. And there'll be some pastors there. He's going to be speaking at Smithtown Gospel Tabernacle tonight at 7 o'clock. I'd encourage each of you to go there. But I can't wait to look him in the eye and say thank you for not selling out. This is a man who became a multi-millionaire overnight as soon as that Purpose Driven Life book took off. And they said to him, hey, how do you handle all the wealth? And he said, well, we used to tithe 10% and live on 90%, but now we tithe 90% and live on 10%. And then he went to this church who had been pastoring there for, I believe, 28 years at that point. And they went back in the records and they found out every dollar the church had ever given to him. And he paid the church back with interest for every dollar that he ever spent. Drives the same car, lives in the same home, and has channeled millions of dollars towards AIDS research and reaching out to the poor in Africa. Great is his reward in heaven. I cannot wait to say to him today, thanks for not trying to justify your Armani suits and your Rolex watches. You see, the other giver is the giver who gives coram Deo. He gives in such a way that it is hidden from others, not letting your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Notice, it's far enough away that others can't see it, but it's close enough for you to make an intentional offering. Do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. You see, this one's reward reaches its intended audience. When we do, whether it's giving of our finances or reaching out to other people in various ways, giving to the poor, ministering to those who are needy, when we do that coram Deo, when we do that solely with the intent of pleasing God, it reaches its intended audience and it is received as an act of worship, and great will be your reward, Jesus said. Coram Deo. We are to live our lives to the audience of one. And you know, the pressure is and the temptation is for every one of us, hey, we want to be seen. We want people to know what we're doing. Now, we'd never say that to that, admit to that at parties, but the truth of it is, there's something in us that wants to be recognized. And what Jesus is saying here is, again, he's not talking about the act that you're performing, but rather the heart that is actually doing it. That's why I love Jesus' teaching. It gets right to the heart of the matter. Look at Colossians chapter 3 and in verse 23, Paul wrote to the church of Colossae, he says, "And whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ." And so the first thing I wanted you to see is that there's two kinds of givers. There's those who give with the sounding trumpet, and they, as they give, they will receive their award as they get the nod of approval from all of humanity. The other giver is the one who doesn't do it to be seen, but solely does it coram Deo. And his act of worship is received as an act of worship because it reaches its intended audience, which is God. The other thing I wanted to point out is that when we live coram Deo, we find ourselves getting less disappointed with other people. Right? When we truly live before the face of God, we find ourselves getting less disappointed with other people. I've said it several times in the past. Disappointment is the result of misplaced expectations. Think about that for a second. Disappointment is the result of misplaced expectations. Too many times we may think we're doing something for God, but when it doesn't get noticed, right? When the appreciation doesn't come our way for what we've done, it reveals how far from coram Deo we really are living out our lives. Everybody say ouch. Because we've all been disappointed. We've all felt slighted. We've all felt overlooked. We've all felt like I have done and nobody has noticed. And what that does is it reveals something in us that needs to go to the cross. That everything we do must be done coram Deo in the face of God. Now, having said that, let me just, that doesn't get anybody off the hook. We need to show appreciation of one another. We need to affirm one another. We must acknowledge the blessings that other people have been in our lives. And so what I'm not saying here is condoning not acknowledging when somebody's been a blessing to you. Everybody gets that, right? We need to do that. We all need encouragement. I need encouragement. We all need to feel like we're going in the right direction. And so do you. But when it doesn't come, and there's times that it doesn't, When there's when you're looking around to see, is anybody with me? Is anybody understand me? Does anybody realize how much I've poured myself out for this person and all they do is remind me of what I haven't done for them? It's in those times that I must remind myself that I have taken on the yoke of my rabbi. And he has taught me that I am to live my life coram Deo, not seeking the applaud and accolades of man, but knowing that there will be a day where I will hear the words from that same rabbi, "Well done, my good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of the Lord." I believe with all my heart that there are times when God will allow us to feel not appreciated by other people, just so that we can, so that he can, in a way that only God can show us, just where our heart is really at. I think it's part of our sanctification process. I really do. I think for the one who wants to radically live for Jesus and truly be his disciple and do the things that we're called to be, I believe God will shut the awareness of people around in your life so that they won't see those things that you have done for them. So that all you so that all the affirmation you're looking for, kind of like the same thing with Gary, those people on any given day probably would have looked out for you. But God said, no, I want Gary to know I'm the one looking out for him. And I believe in the same way that as we do our thing, as we're ministering to other people, as we're giving of ourselves, as we're pouring out of our lives, God will silence the mouths of other people who normally would love you, who would appreciate you, who certainly do love you, but they're not being sensitive at the moment because God wants us to feel that and see what is coming up in us. I'm to live coram Deo. As your pastor, I got to tell you, I haven't arrived there. Hey, there have been times that I've done things, and I just thought, did they notice that? You know, and I've had a decision to make at that moment, and I find myself having to make this decision a lot. Am I going to do it for God? Or am I going to do it for people? Because if I do it for people, I'm going to become the embittered pastor that I've seen on display in so many other places who don't want to be around their people because they see their people as they are people who don't appreciate all that I do. They don't know what I do for them and they avoid them. I don't want to become that. And so I have a decision to make at that moment. And I believe a lot of times the insensitivity, if you will, is nothing more than God training and teaching this pastor to know where I need to put my emotional eggs into what basket. And God will do the same for every one of us as we seek to be like our rabbi. And he seeks to test that we are truly marching to the audience of one and living a life that truly is coram Deo. Here's something to take home and work through. There's something to take into our private prayer closet and ask ourselves the question, do I live my life coram Deo? Let me think about the last couple of people who've really upset me. Oftentimes, I was disappointed in them because my expectations were in the wrong place. Or is there something in you that really seeks the praise of others? I think we all deal with that in different levels. Or how about this one? And I see this a lot. This feeling of that somebody owes me something, right? I have done this and therefore you have done, you must do that. And we've all met those people who feel like the world owes them a living or the church owes them a living or somebody in the church should be doing this and they're not. How dare they? Well, maybe God's doing something in you. Maybe there's a little bit of selfishness that God's putting his finger on in you. And those are the kinds of things that you don't answer in public gatherings like this. Those are the kinds of things that we take back to the hill and speak to the rabbi and say, God, where am I at? Am I living my life to be a man pleaser or a God pleaser? Who is my focus? Who is my intended audience? And see, what's interesting is that's the yoke of our rabbi. To give and to pray, to fast, and to live our lives coram Deo in the face of God. But what's real neat is that rabbi secured our ability to do just that by going to the cross for you and for me. You see, the thing that I'm talking about this morning and the things that Jesus talked about, they were not things that are natural to us. It's not in us to want to please God, because there's nothing in us that seeks after God. And so God initiated contact with his creation in the person of Jesus Christ. And you know, as we prepare our hearts for communion this morning, let's remember that nobody broke their body for you like he did. Nobody shed their blood for you like he did. And nobody is more worthy of all of our hearts and all of our expressions of worship and praise than he is. May we live lives that are coram Deo. I'm going to ask Audrey to come, and Audrey's going to lead us in a song this morning. And after that, I'm going to have the worship team come up and play something. And we're going to have a time of communion with one another. And we're going to do something a little bit different. I don't know if this is crazy or not, but it wouldn't be beyond us, that's for sure. We're going to, and I'll give you the time to do that. But we're going to then come forward, and we're going to take of the bread, and we're going to take of the cup. And then I'm going to ask you not to take it yet, though. Go back to your seat and hold it, and we'll partake together. But let's remember, as you come forward, I wanted to do it a little bit different this week because we're talking about living our lives in the face of God. And I thought, you know what, we'll do something a little different. As you stand up and come forward, let it be symbolic of the life that you seek to live. As you come forward and you come to the one who's paid the price for you, let that be your testimony and say, God, that's my desire, that I might live coram Deo.